Okay, welcome to the Incomparables TV flashcast of Sons of Anarchy. I am, as per usual, Lisa Schmeiser, and with me is Philip Mozeliak.
Yes.
Yes, we're here. And I have a word of the week for this episode, but Philip, I want to hear yours.
You know, there's something about St. Dismas.
Yes.
That's that. I don't have a word, but that theme is really strong. And it was just that little bit of something that we saw when Mr. Juicy did his little number.
Have you, the word I was thinking of was constriction.
Ooh. I like that.
And the reason I was thinking
Forget
about
mine.
That.
Forget
well,
mine.
No, there was a great analysis in New York Magazine this week that gets back to St. Dismas and talks about all of the biblical imagery running through the episode. But mind you, this episode suffered from the same thing that every episode this season has, which is it was about 35% too long. But from the very first shot where you see Gemma hobbling along in her uncomfortable boots all the way through the rest of the episode, there's just this real sense that everybody's bad choices and circumstances are tightening in around them. And there's no way out. Everybody at this point is digging in, buckling down, putting down their head and pushing through.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there's not a single person on that screen through any part of this episode who doesn't feel it, who doesn't broadcast the feeling that they've got their back against the, that they don't have their back against the wall.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are expected because Gemma's whole arc over the episode was just, she's increasingly trapped. There was one that hit me as completely out of left field, but, I'll get to that in a minute. And actually, speaking of minutes, let me pull up the timer.
Look at that segue.
Yes.
Professional.
I know. I couldn't do it without you. Sons of Anarchy explainer timer. I have a minute to recap a 90-minute episode starting now. We don't find out how Gemma escapes from Juice, which is perhaps one of the best writerly sleights of hand ever. She ends up at a diner where we discover that Rachel Berry has not made it big in Hollywood and is instead slinging coffee. Eventually, Unser and Wendy come to pick her up. Unser tells Gemma that she has to talk to the cops. Gemma says no. Jax prevails on her. By the end of the episode, Gemma's in tears because she realizes her house of lies is about to start crumbling down. Meanwhile, Juice fails at getting himself killed during a robbery, and then he fails at getting himself handed over to the Mayans. And by the end of the episode, he's back with the Sons. The Sons are not too happy to see him. Also, during this episode, Jax and his little biker buddies exacerbate race and or criminal relations through most of the greater San Francisco Bay Area and San Joaquin County. And that's it. I did it. 10 seconds to spare. Yay.
That was pretty strong.
Yeah.
That's probably been the strongest of all.
You know, which is surprising because this is another, I feel like we should be in act two by now, but it still feels like there's a lot of furniture moving going on.
Well, before we get started, I have one forecasting thought.
Okay.
Is next week, are we going to have a break from the end of episode 7 to episode 8? Is there going to be something like football or other things getting in the way so they're going to take a break for a couple weeks?
I don't know.
Because I've got this crazy little feeling that come this next episode, even though we're on episode 6, that something significant is going to happen that's going to not be resolved for a couple weeks.
And we'll have to sit on it, and I'll have to check my DVR's recording schedule, because that's pretty much how I find out these days.
Because, again, I didn't watch the previews for the next...
There's a preview for next week.
Yeah, I don't watch those.
And I did watch that, but I won't spoil you because I think that's why you do it. And I do know from reading the Entertainment Weekly piece a couple weeks ago, apparently there's a significant character death in episode 9.
Okay.
That said, part of me is like, we're already, bodies should be dropping a lot faster than they are. So
yeah,
unless Sutter really intends to have the show go out like Hamlet and everybody dies in the very last act.
Exactly.
But Anyway, the thing that really caught me by surprise this week, the totally out of left field thing, is you have that discussion between Bobby, who is like Jax's biggest enabler ever, with, oh, he's just deep, he feels things, he has a heavy burden, you know, and all that usual self-justifying BS.
Yes.
Like, he has that discussion with Wendy, and she's all, I still love Jax. And I'm all, wait, what? What? This man crammed a needle full of heroin into your arm. He brutalized you. He caused you to lose your job. He caused you to lose your sobriety. Your girlfriend moved back to San Francisco. You know, the only good things that have happened in her life in the past 4 years happened when she deliberately moved out of Jax's orbit. So where is this I still love him business coming from?
Right. And it's been very convenient. And
yeah.
Though it's not completely a surprise, because in the episode, two episodes previous, she did say, I still love him, but I can't be with him.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but you are absolutely valid in that this is kind of, I know there's a literary term for this, but let's just call it BS.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't ring true to her character. There was nothing in her character at all over the last 6 years that, I take that back. In season one, when she was still, you know, they had the new baby and her life was completely turned upside down. There was that brief thing that they had towards the end of season one where they sleep together and then Tara stomps back into Jax's life and Jax is just like literally just drops Wendy on the floor and is, oh, hello, doctor. But,
well, has something changed because she's been able to be around the boys, even
I
though?
I wonder, yeah. If she's like, well, I could fall in love with this kind of life where I get to raise both the boys and Jax is, you know, let's face it, Jax is easy on the eyes. You know, he's going to give you his space since he's constantly motoring around the greater Northern California area.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I mean, if you can ignore the fact that you've got the mother-in-law from hell, it's not a bad life.
Right.
But it rings false to me, because this is the same woman who was actively scheming to help take the kids away and box out Gemma. And now it just, like, literally 2 weeks ago, she was scheming against Gemma and Jax. And now it's all, but I love him. I can be with him. And no, it makes no sense.
And can I say that, again, we're here at another mirror point.
Yeah.
Where Bobby was talking to Tara.
Yeah.
The same exact way.
Yeah. Bobby's the biggest enabler. He's like the worst thing to ever happen to Jax. And the reason I say that is because he's constantly filling. He's like, oh, you've got mission, brother. We'll support you, whatever you do. And this thing is bigger than all of us. And brotherhood, brotherhood. And because he's so good at spinning that line of BS, Jax is never going to have that rock bottom moment of clarity where he's like, wait, what have I done? And then Bobby enables the hell out of Jax's behavior because he's always running interference between Jax and the rest of the world, saying, well, you have to understand Jax, you know, Jax feels things, or Jax is a deep thinker, or Jax is just confused, or Jax is sad because his dad died 20 years ago or whatever. And, you know, it's a very harmful and self-destructive type of love, I think.
Okay, so wait a minute. Has Bobby become the character version of what Jax is thinking and we don't know, Bobby tells us?
No, because I've always thought that Bobby, the biggest flaw in this is that Bobby doesn't really have the read on Jax that he thinks he does.
Okay.
Bobby is basically writing Sons of Anarchy fan fiction.
He's making the Harlequin romance version.
Yes. Jax leapt off the bike, his sturdy chest heaving as he pulled out his gun and shot. No, Bobby has this fiction for, well, this is what the club should be, and this is the way it used to be, and these are how these people are. And he's very good at telling the story, but he's not quite as good at actually reading the situation.
He wants the situation to be as he wants it, not as it is.
Yeah, there's that great quote from The Wire that I'm going to mangle, where I think it's Omar, where he's like, no, you see things as you want to see them. I see them as they are. And that's the thing, is Bobby, for all of his pragmatism in tiny ways, and he's a good guy with a gun in the heat of the moment, he really does not have a good bead on reality.
I concur with that. You've turned me on that easily.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
His character has been kind of a fading character until he's recently come back. But even so, he just really hasn't been a full character the way he was when Clay was around.
No, it's been interesting seeing how the club personalities have kind of shifted over 7 seasons and who gets focus and who does not. It's surprising to me, for example, that Juice has actually turned out to be the linchpin in so many big dramatic moments. Because remember, he was originally just hired for side color.
Yeah.
And instead it was Theo Rossi.
Yeah, now he's like, big name. Hey, by the way, kudos to you, because at the onset of this episode, we get Gemma at the diner, which now hear me out on this one, because I think you'll see you might be absolutely correct. If Gemma lives, she's going to work at that diner and be friends with that girl. And apparently she's from Glee, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, she is. That's
I don't watch that show. So
I made the Rachel Berry joke. So I've always thought that what I was wondering about with Gemma and Gertie,
that horrible, like, why go with that name?
Well, you know what's really funny is I know a couple little girls under the age of 5 who have that name. So Gert, and they're called either Gertie or Trudy. And so Gertrude is actually coming back because there's that whole wave of old lady names that's coming back for babies. And one of my favorite aunts was actually Aunt Gert, that big Irish Catholic family. So go figure. I feel like the name was just a bad idea. And Sutter's always just had a weird tin ear for how to name people. But, what I thought about Gemma's whole exchange with Gertie is I think she actually saw herself. And I think at this point, Gemma is, I mean, look, it's obvious she's gone off the deep end in a pretty fundamental way because she's having conversations with Tara constantly now.
Oh, that's just getting really weird. I mean, it's cool to an extent. I mean, I can get that. But like, it's becoming kind of like, it's becoming almost comical rather than.
You're kind of waiting for somebody to catch her at this point.
And Gertie did.
And Gemma has the conversation where she says, we were close. And I thought to myself, would Tara characterize it that way? Because
heck no.
It's, and again, what's funny is the two big heartbreaks of this entire series are entirely Gemma related for me. And the first is when Gemma and Clay had that huge knockdown dragout fight and he beats the crap out of her. Like, I actually grieved over their relationship because I had loved it. And I was like, oh my God, because I was like, well, in a way she eggs him on to do really terrible things, but he brings out this love and protectiveness in her, and she brings out the better instincts in him, or rather the better impulses, which he then perverts as he goes off and does terrible things.
Yeah.
And like, I had been pulling for those two crazy kids, and then he.
Did I lose you?
Are you here?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
And then he, beats her like a drum, and that was heartbreaking because there's no coming back from that, obviously.
Right.
And then my second big heartbreak, as I've said time and time again, has been Gemma and Tara, because it was a motherless daughter and a childless mother, in a manner of speaking, because Gemma's never gotten over losing Thomas, and the two of them could have been so good for each other. And so I find it really fascinating now that Gemma is telling people, oh, my daughter-in-law and I were so close. And she's having these deep, warm, emotional conversations with Tara that she would have never had with her in real life.
Absolutely.
And it just says so much about this character. And A, she's crazy. And B, she is literally unable to open up and tell the truth to anyone who's alive.
Well, in a sense, she's actually lying to herself in some ways that, having these conversations that she would normally never have.
Yeah. And the big lie was, oh, it had to happen this way. I'm like, no, it really didn't.
Nope. That's true. Now, I will tell you that this is getting interesting. The fact that, Nero has been a fairly smart guy in this entire series.
Yeah, except for Gemma.
Right. Mm-hmm. But as so far as, he talks to Juice, doesn't get a whole bunch of information, at least not outward truth, but he gets mm-hmm. enough where he, I mean, look, we, if we're standing in Nero's shoes, he sees the, Gemma's truck. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, obviously he's smart enough to figure out, wait a minute, this isn't adding up.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of wondering how it, who's going to be the one to tell? Cause I think that's what we're setting up for is like, is it going to be Juice at the final hour? Is it going to be Gemma can't because now she has to go to the cops and like basically lie as her account of events that have transpired.
Yeah. So when she starts crying towards the end of the episode, do you think she's crying because she's panicky over how she's going to carry off this talking to the cops thing? Or do you think she's crying with a little bit of relief or...
I think she is relieved. I think she thinks that this is all going to work out now, mm-hmm. but she can't possibly think that it, let me rectify that. Mm-hmm. At that time, she thinks that Juice could be anywhere, correct?
Yeah. Well,
does she know that she does?
That's right. Yeah, because they mentioned it. That's why she panics at the end of the episode, is because it was bad enough when Unser was pushing her to talk to the cops. But now that Juice is back and she finds out that he's desperate enough to start bargaining club information for his life, you know, she's not dumb. She knows he's going to run off at the mouth.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure. I think maybe those tears could be both. I mean, that sounds kind of odd, but it could easily be for the simple fact of, you know, she knows she's at time is limited.
Yeah.
Of what's about to transpire.
Yeah. I am sure there'll be a way out of this, and perhaps it'll be just as simple as smash cut to the Reaper in one episode and then fade up and Gemma's getting like a cup of coffee. All, so Gertie, how are the hours? And you're like, ugh. You know, the same way where the episode started this time and you just see Gemma walking and you're like, how on earth? What did she say? You know, because that should have been a climactic confrontation. That should have been something where she either, because she had to talk him into not killing her, or she had to correctly guess he couldn't do it. It would have been nice to see how she did that. It would have been nice to see him remind her that, look, I have something on you that's leverage, lady.
Yeah.
So shut your mouth. And we didn't see any of that. Instead... And, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Gemma tonight, but instead, you know, we just see her walking and finding her diner, and bafflingly enough, she manages to have the wherewithal to buy some cigarettes and some coffee or something.
Yeah.
And go from there. What I thought was interesting, what I loved last night was when Nero and Juice are in the closet and they finally settled the Darvini business.
Yeah.
And I also loved it when Juice finally was like, I'm not running. I'm not hiding. This is death row.
And I'm a coward.
And I deserve it. And it's a pity that he's not, I'm at peace with who I am and what I did, but it's nice that he's resigned in a way, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought up something just there and I hadn't thought about in this way. Basically, would you say Nero has forgiven him? Or could potentially he be in the process of forgiving him?
I think Nero's in the process of forgiving him because I think Nero has decided that life is too short to hold a lot of grudges.
I mean well, yeah, what's done is done.
When you think about it, Nero is pretty much the closest thing this show has to moral compass at this point.
Correct.
And he actually does walk his walk, which makes him pretty rare in the world of Sons of Anarchy, where people often say one thing and do another. Nero is pretty internally and externally consistent. So what I'm going to guess is that Juice's conversation with Nero gave Juice a measure of peace, and it's given Nero something to chew on, and he's going to have some sort of confrontation within himself over whether or not this is the life he wants with the Sons of Anarchy at this point. Because let's face it, before Gemma, He had this brothel. He had his sobriety. He had his half-sister he was taking care of at the brothel. He was getting close to retirement. He had a great relationship with his son. And now he's got a bunch of dead hookers and a brothel he has to rebuild. He's got a lot of gang entanglement he had worked very hard to get out of. He's back into it now. He's got a bunch of unwashed bikers constantly demanding things of him night and day. And he's got Gem up his tail.
And he's also got the Mayans, who basically, with Alvarez, said, you know, Mark was like, look, you've been playing the politician this whole time. You're not going to get the chance to do that in the closet with you. And that leads me to believe that it could easily be Nero who's the one that's going to tell Jax one way or the other what happened. Does he tell Jax because of it's the truth? Or does he not tell Jax or tell him something else in order to save the woman he loves?
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like it's going to have to come down to him.
At some point, he's got to ask himself if what he has for Gemma is love or if it's delusion. Because there's a whole lot, I love you, Gem. And I'm like, really? What is there to love about her exactly?
Yeah, I mean...
What has Gemma done that's particularly lovable in this case?
I'll have to concur with that. I can't say anything.
Yeah, because the difference between her and Clay is there are all these little moments that you saw, you know, again, right up until the moment where he rang her bell, where, you know, you saw her, you saw him. One of the sweetest scenes in this entire series, in my opinion, was in season 3, after she's back in the hospital, you know, she finds out about Abel and she clutches her chest and she's in the hospital. And the next scene you see, she's in the hospital, she's handcuffed to the side of the bed. Clay is sitting right next to her in the chair, just reading the newspaper. He's got one hand on the hospital railing on the bed. And then the scene after that, he's holding her makeup mirror so she can do her makeup. And it's just, there was this little, and you know, there were all these scenes where she was just calmly getting him a cup of coffee or, you know.
Yeah,
just
like, those kind of scenes, like it's where they're normal.
There was this genuine back and forth where you got a real sense that they took a lot of pleasure in making the other person's life easier. And like with Nero and Gemma, you don't get that at all. It's this big, dramatic, almost teenage feeling heated affair. But, you know, we've never seen anything where they've just been able to exist.
Well, and even to push that point further, you know, they don't live together.
No.
I mean, so in really, they are dating at best. You know, it's not a hardcore, you know, real relationship. It's a relationship based around really a one night stand.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Not to say relationships can't start that way, but.
Yeah. No, it's. This is why I love you, Gem. And I'm like, why? Why do you love her? I think he loves the idea of her. I think he loved the idea of a ready-made family where he'd have a woman and there was, you know, an adult son and he could be a surrogate grandpapa to somebody. And, you know, that I can see where that fantasy is appealing because Nero's like, look, I spend all night dealing with screaming hookers and angry Johns. I just want to come home to, you know, a nice breakfast. Kiss the grandkids on the head as they walk out the door. It's a good day. Like, you know, he's got the family orientation. He wants the fantasy and he's not looking at the reality.
Yeah.
You know,
you just brought it right back again
to Bobby. Yes. Oh my gosh.
It's your perception. For some reason, his perception of what he is doing is completely distorted.
Yeah. No, it's, I think this is why I keep rooting for Lynn and for Marks is because we don't see enough of their personal lives to see whether they're wandering around in a fog of delusion either. But Marks always seems to be one of these guys who deals with what is, not what he wishes would be.
Okay, two things.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing how he reacts when there's a pile of bodies on a construction site.
Exactly. Where has he been this whole time? And I understand.
He's on How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, is he?
The actor who plays him is now... the boyfriend of the main character on How to Get Away with Murder. Because the first time I saw him, I'm like, he's playing a cop? No, he's August Marks. He's running up.
See, because this is starting to become kind of an issue now. And there are two prongs to this that I find, you know, very problematic. Yeah. Is when you don't have a character and you've just been talking about him, you know, you kind of have to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that most of these episodes have been, and to your point, 35% of it could be cut, but if Marx was in it, it would make it much more rich.
Yeah.
Now, this doesn't even begin to, you know, at least we've seen Marx a couple episodes ago. We haven't seen Jerry in how long?
3 episodes, and he's basically the what is it? Chekhov says loaded gun in Act One goes off in Act Three. He's basically a loaded gun. We knew that from how he reacted to the deaths of the people that psycho killer Jax wanted to you know took out for the hell of it.
Right, and one of those guys, one of those guys is
son,
his son,
nephew, something. Yeah,
he's something.
He's gonna, yeah,
and. And I mean, you know, and no one's been asking the question of where is this one that went missing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, my biggest complaints about this season so far, every episode is way too long for what's happening in it. And the other thing is I'm getting really tired of it being, oh, every week they go and they shoot thousands of bullets, A-team style and wipe out another ethnic group and, they're convinced this will help them solidify their position within the underworld. What I'm wondering is why at this point hasn't every other gang in Northern California been like, look, these jerk stores have been out of jail for 3 months. The body count is in the triple digits. They're not good for business. Let's take them out.
Exactly. And
the sons are not that strong. They constantly have to make alliances because they're not that strong. So why isn't anybody wiping them out?
What? And let's just talk facts. How many how many do they actually have patched in? I mean, we're talking how many sit at the table? Less than 10.
Yeah, it's unnerving how small it is now.
And then now with this whole idea of a grim patch over, what?
Mm-hmm. Which is. It's funny that they've gotten to that because I remember one of the things that I found so jarring in the first season, but I also thought was incredibly necessary, was like how casually racist every single one of those guys was.
Exactly.
And then I realized, well, you have to do this because you have to challenge people and force them to examine what makes them have sympathy for somebody and whether or not they can have sympathy for somebody on a pure, this is the human condition basis, as opposed to I have much in common with this person basis.
And it has everything to do with them doing business with the Aryan Brotherhood. They can't necessarily be the Sons of Anarchy and be working only with white pride. If they do that, they essentially become white pride. So they have to stand for whatever reason, because you know in season one they would have never done that. But now they have the Grim Bastards riding with them and Chibs provoking an all-out fist fight and going pack of fives and saying, you know, what? And then Jax even said, you know, this isn't 1958.
Yeah. I don't know. I to be honest, I find a lot of the main plot lines really frustrating these days with Jax and his, we're making a deal here and we're doing that. Cause I was like, you know, for 4 seasons, you were trying your damnedest to get out of drug running. You were trying to get out of the gun business. You were trying to go legit, and now all of a sudden you're oh, forget it. I'm all in again. The end justifies the means. I'm off to kill some more Chinese people. And it just there's nothing about this that I get that they're trying. Oh, he's out of his mind with grief, and he's destroying everything because of it. But it still doesn't ring true because, you know, Jax may be grief-stricken, but he's not stupid.
But he's acting like criminal lubrication. Like, he is somehow the concierge of, like, here, I got a bunch of different ethnicities. I know how to make each ethnicity work with each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. They couldn't figure this out on their own? I mean, maybe they can't, but, like, really? You're the one that's gonna unify the races in criminologies.
Yeah, it's, you know, if at the risk of sounding like Bobby Elvis here, it's Jax has been spinning his wheels. He's either so far gone in grief that he has no idea if he's coming or going anymore, or this is just all a lot of contrivance, or this is some, you know, we'll get a reveal in like episode 11 where you've all become part of my master plan and it'll be like into season 3 all over again. We're surprised he's had a plan. But I'm beginning to lose a lot of patience with this, and I'm finding the ancillary plot lines and the what will happen to Juice? What will happen to Nero? Is Tig really going to marry Venus, or what's going to happen there? I'm finding there's a lot more interesting to me right now. I really could care less about Jax, and that's a bad place for the show to be. Because
exactly. I feel exactly season, the same way.
Yeah, and this whole season is supposed to be about, does the king lose his kingdom? Or, you know, what we're supposed to... We're supposed to have a bigger emotional stake in what's going on, and instead everything is just getting logy and incoherent. And
like the precept for wanting to do this mm-hmm. show is because we both like the show a lot. Yeah. And like, I hate to be like, I feel like we're tearing it apart, but it's like, but you're not giving me a whole lot of great things to say, oh, wow, that was awesome. It's like I find myself kind of, you know, I don't even have to take a scalpel out to see like kind of the issues.
Yeah. Ugh. Also, and here's the thing is the kids were the big MacGuffin for the last 2 years. You've had Wendy threatening to file for custody to get Abel back. You had Gemma going off the deep end when it looked like Tara was going to take the kids and go. Jax claims that everything he does for the kids. An entire plot line, most of season 3 was, we got to go get a kid back from Ireland. We have not, I don't know if the powers that be are from like, oh, kid actors, no. And they're keeping them off screen. But, you know, this entire episode, I'm like, who's watching the kids? Who's taking them to preschool? Who's bringing them home?
Well, and that brings
which is
up.
So inconsequential.
But I know.
I was like, it is a wonder these kids don't have reactive attachment disorder. Like, they have no consistent grown-ups in their life if this is how the people in their lives behave. Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, you almost just need to, like, he just needs to sideline some of this stuff because we don't need it, but you yeah. have already made it happen, and we're starting to traverse time, so you kind of have mm-hmm. to, but it's like, you know, some of these things you just gotta limit. And I guess in some ways he did limit with the killing of Tara.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it kills her off and that kind of breaks a whole plot line. So it doesn't have to be fulfilled.
At this point, I've given up on rat being a fed.
Yeah.
My heartbreak there is permanent and awful. At this point, I would not be surprised if Rat and his new little MC girlfriend are like the last one standing and they end up adopting the boy.
Oh, jeez.
And like moving to Tahoe to raise. I don't even know. It's, you know, I have always, I don't get me wrong. I love this show and I've spent a lot of time, you know, thinking it through and, it's interesting what they're doing with it and wondering where it's going to go. I've never felt like the time and the energy that I've sunk into enjoying this show has been wasted. But as of right now, I'm beginning to lose a little faith that it's going to end in a way that honors the beautifully constructed seasons that we've come to expect from this show.
And I think that's like, I'll text you offline and I'll say, yeah. Ooh, wow. And it seems, I think because it's like that idea, like, mm-hmm. ooh, yeah. Something's happening. But then when I really go back, mm-hmm. I'm like, really? Was it that exciting? I don't know.
I feel relieved something happened because so many episodes now are just people and it's all dark this year. So it's just people sitting in the dark all about
right.
something. And,
well, and I feel like super excited when I see stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Dismas, but it's yes. not, it's Demos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. Like I said, there was a beautiful thing in New York Magazine about it where,
but I felt so smart because I was like,
he's
ah.
the good thief. Yes. He's the good thief crucified with Christ on Calvary. That's what I do know about him. And, the fact that they talk about the good thief and they're making that reference to him and that Nero is pretty heavily Catholic pretty much implies that there's going to be some outlaw who gets their just desserts in some way, but because they're repenting, they get grace.
Okay, so,
who's
Jesus?
Well, you could have argued that Jax was your Christ figure for a while, but...
I don't think so.
Not anymore.
I think it's Nero.
You think Nero's the Christ figure?
It's gotta be.
I could see that. I could buy that.
Because while Juice never really asked for it, mm-hmm. he was given kind of, you know, forgiveness.
Yes.
So we're led to believe anyway.
Mm-hmm. I would buy that.
Look, there's the only conversation. I mean, what? Juice doesn't really even talk to Jax.
Yeah. No, they just give each other significant looks because this is the club that does more significant looks than any other social organization out there.
Well, it's all in the look.
Oh, so many significant looks.
Well, hey, Chibs gave a little wink to...
what's her face?
Yeah.
Altea, yeah.
Yeah, twice.
I think he likes her a lot more than he's letting himself think about it.
Oh, absolutely. There's mm-hmm. no doubt. They are thick as thieves. They are in it.
Yeah. I wonder how that's going to work out when he has to kill her.
Well, he's going to be the one that has to do it.
Yeah, because that's how this show rolls.
Or somebody else does, and he flips. I mean, just flips out.
I don't know. He's always been very resigned to the whole, this is the life I chose, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but the way he talks, mm-hmm. he, first of all, this episode, he was a little more Scottish than usual. Like even I had to take it, what did you just say?
This is why I'm glad I watch it with closed captioning sometimes, because you're like, what? What?
Right. But the way in which he talks to Althea is mm-hmm. very different than anybody else I've ever heard him talk to. I mean, it's clearly true. I'm talking to you and then I'm talking to you. And it's so no one else can hear, but I want you to hear it.
Yeah, it's very intimate.
Very.
I think for all the talk about brotherhood that these guys are constantly gassing on about, they're all very deeply lonely people. And,
well,
when you have a group of men
are like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
We might not become catty per se, mm-hmm. but there's very much prima donna actions within the fraternal organizations.
Uh-huh.
And so no one wants to necessarily act like they have a sensitive side. It's when guys get together individually, like with a pair or three, mm-hmm. that happens. Now, I'm letting you really way behind the curtain and mm-hmm. saying that, but it's when you have a group of like four or more, you're never going to get that.
No.
Because you think what I'm telling you is going to be a secret, and it never is.
I just find it very interesting that these guys who allegedly have this brotherhood and these connections that are strong enough to compel them to do all sorts of really dumb, self-destructive things are all also so desperately lonely underneath, you know? It's worked out. Not it's worked out, but for example, I seriously doubt Tig would be running to Venus or be as connected to her as he is if it weren't for the fact that there's some sort of fundamental disconnect between him and the club. I mean, he's still a good soldier. He still obviously likes these guys and so on and so forth. But, there's something that the club can't do for him anymore. And that's why he's turning to Venus. And he didn't need that before.
Right. And he was, I mean, look, he mm-hmm. was the sergeant in arms. He was the kill taker.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was really kind of like muzzled.
Well, I used to joke that, he was Gemma and Clay's oldest son, because that's how he kind of acted. They were his North Star.
Mm-hmm.
And he took it really, he took it as bad as I did when Gemma shows up all beat up.
Right.
And he realizes that things are going to change for real and for good. And then he does something dumb based on a lie, because that's how half of the dumb things on this show happen. And then his daughter gets killed as a result of something that he thought was a club thing. And, just more women die because of stupid misunderstandings on this show. It's unbelievable.
I'll be honest with you. I'm, mm-hmm. Going back an episode. I really, you know, like Tiggs made a little bit of a side joke in this episode.
Yeah.
With the
it's grim again, though.
Yeah, but I really didn't like the fact that, like, all those girls died like that. Really bothered me on, like, probably, you know, a fatherly level. There are some things I can handle at this age, yeah. And some things I'll allow, but then there are some that I just don't like. It's just like, that was a little much.
Yeah.
And I think Nero, as his character, should be more pissed.
Yeah, he's pretty much like, I also think maybe Nero, well, to be fair, this is his third season with us, so he has had some deep characterization by this point. Yeah, it would be nice to see him angrier. I have a feeling that he works very hard not to be angry, though, because if you read between the lines on his backstory, one gets the sense that he ran around and he was a gangbanger precisely because he had an anger problem.
Well, and let's be honest, he's a pimp.
Yes.
So maybe he doesn't. Maybe I'm looking at this all wrong. Like, maybe, you know, they are what they are to him.
Yeah.
They're already employees. Yeah. They've kind of lost the ability. Yes, they are people, but they are a commodity for him. They are objects to earn the cream. You know what I mean? So it's like, they're an ends to a means. They're not really people to him.
Exactly. They're not people. And that's the thing. It's, I think because Nero is the one guy who visibly has a conscience, he kind of gets a pass, both even from me until I stop and think about it, and other people where, oh, he's a good guy, he's getting sucked into this. You're like, wait, no, he actually makes perpetuating a really harmful status quo possible.
you're a freaking pimp. I mean,
maybe what he's doing is he's providing them with a safer place to listen, a safer place to do what they would do anyway.
Hey,
and that's probably the way he looks at it is, look, I'm just taking off some overhead, and in return, I provide a nice place for them. They're contractors. They're safer here, so really it's a public service I'm doing. Maybe that's how he rationalizes it, but at the end of the day, he's trafficking women.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we take a role from the other guys, you can't have a conscience in the pimp game.
No.
I mean, Dolomite and everybody says, no, you can't.
Yeah. So, at this point, who do you root for on the show?
I'm still going to root for Tiggs, and...
Yeah,
I was telling a few people after our couple shows back when you were asking me about, you know, who I really have kind of grown attached to. Who have I seen the biggest flourish in? And Tiggs has become my favorite character now. Except I know it now. I thought it was Chibs, but you know, here I am. I mean, I'm curious. What will happen to Tiggs? That's who I'm following now.
Rooting for him to walk off into the sunset with Venus?
Look, I think I just, I got, I think they're already married.
Yeah. Well, you do, huh?
I think this is the secret that will come out. I think they are.
I hope so. That would be sweet.
It would be a good fall, like if I could make that prediction and be right about it, I would love that to be right. And I have to wonder. I don't think Juice is going to die.
You don't think so, huh?
I think everybody thinks he's going to die, but I don't think he does. Everybody's convinced of it, but I bet he doesn't.
Well, it would probably be worse for him to live with what he's done.
True.
Yeah.
So maybe he just offs himself. But see, he already talks about the cow. Right.
Yeah.
We know they can't do it. He's already tried.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nah. No, I don't know who to follow. I just don't want it to be the I don't want this to all be the Gemma story, but I guess it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's too heavy.
I can feel for her. And like I said, obviously she's broken my heart twice on this show. And so obviously, you know, I'm engaged, but at this point I just want her done. I want her resolved. I feel like she's sucking all of the air out of the episodes.
Yes.
And it's getting boring.
And it starts to...
There, I said it.
All right.
It's getting boring.
I know. Yeah. And so, like, any scrap of excitement, I go crazy about.
Yeah. You're like, please! please.
Okay.
Please justify my intense interest in this show.
Episode 7. It's going to be big. It's going to be big.
It's got to be big, man. We're literally like the minute you start episode 7, you're beginning the downward slide towards the back half of the season. So we got to have hope, right?
Yeah. I mean, and quite honestly, at the end of the day, well, after watching this one a couple times, I still do think it has far and away more stuff in it rising than any episodes prior to. So there's a lot more things being pushed into place and actually executing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope there's some executing.
It was a 6 out of 10.
Okay. All right. I would give it a 5, but again, I feel like all these episodes are way too long.
I think maybe
by like episode 12, when everything is exploding and we're like, oh, thank God they spent all that time in the first half of the season. But right now I'm still kind of irritated. There's been a lot of stunt casting. Oh, look, Courtney Love's a preschool teacher. Oh, look, Rachel Berry from Glee is a waitress. Oh, look, Marilyn Manson runs the white supremacists inside Stockton. And, you know, oh, look, Theo Cosby is now a biker. Yeah. And I'm just, come on, man, either just,
Yeah, it'll all be resolved at 2-hour season finale.
Oh, God.
Or I should say series finale.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how. And that's both fun and exasperating.
I know. Yeah. We've gone on too long. You know
Yes, we have. All right. Well, yes, we're just as bad as Kurt Sutter now.
That's right.
Womp, womp. Okay. Womp. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for logging in as per the usual.
I love it.
Yeah. And I look forward to, hopefully next week, our podcast is 30 minutes of, oh my God.
It will be. We won't know what to do with ourselves.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that day.
All right.
So for TV, the Sons of Anarchy Flashcast, signing off, it's Lisa Schmeiser.
And Phil Moslak saying next week will be better.
Next week will be better. Bye.
It's seriously though.
Next week has to be better. God, it's so frustrating.
I mean, it's like seriously, why do I want to even do this show? Because I'd like the series so much, and you're not giving me what I want.
So bad. Phil can't stand the series, and so he was in our bedroom last night, and at one point he just sort of goes, the show, and he started laughing, and I'm like, why? I loved it so much. I've rewatched almost every season a couple of times, and this season, you know, if they don't tighten the game, it's just so slow and so frustrating, and I can't get a fix on Jax, which is bad because it's your lead. And
well, see, and that's the thing. I think Kurt is writing this, and you. I think you said this like a couple episodes ago. Kurt is writing this for Katie, not Charlie.
Nope.
And that right there is throwing. And, you know, he basically has created this. You know, it's gotten Gemma, and it's gotten bigger and bigger, very small, like and subtle over time. And then now here we know that this is the final season, and it's Gemma I mean, basically the whole plot line revolves around her.
Yeah.
Which is garbage. You know, I mean, especially when you know, it's your husband writing. I mean, I think it's got to be pissing a lot of people off.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've noticed that the Twitter chatter has really died down on this.
Yeah, a lot of the hashtags don't seem to be quite as hard hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nope. People are bored.
It's a shame, but he's gonna fuck it all up.
Yep.
He won't though. He can't. I have to say that in order to mantra.
Please let me justify that the 7 years I've spent enjoying this show.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Right. Well, it's 11:30 your time.
Yeah, it's time to go to bed.
All right. Well, have a good one.
You too.
And I'll see you on the flippity flop, huh?
You got it.
Okay.
Later. Bye.